I'm Larry Langford with the Rusty Spur Ranch in Grapeland, Texas. You're listening to the latest news in Texas agriculture on Texas Ag Today.
This is Texas Ag Today, the number one source for the latest news in Texas agriculture. The largest and most experienced farm news team in the Lone Star State covers it all. From the piney woods of East Texas to the rocky ranges of the Trans-Pecos, and from the Panhandle down to the Rio Grande Valley. Here's today's top stories.
Here's what we know about the HPAI discovery in Texas dairy cattle. We'll have that coming up to kick off today's show.
Has the time come to accept prescribed burning? That's a question being asked in the wake of the Texas Panhandle wildfires. I'm James Hunt, and we'll talk about that on Texas Ag Today.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack recently clarified comments he's made recently on use of the Commodity Credit Corporation funding. I'm Jessica Domel, and I'll have that story coming up on Texas Ag Today.
Now, here's the host of Texas Ag Today, Carrie Martin.
Hello, Texas. Why don't you jump on in with me and buckle up? We're going to take a ride around the Lone Star State as we cover the most important industry in this greatest state in the nation, Texas agriculture. Be sure to hold on tight because it all starts right now. The Texas dairy industry made national news this week with the discovery of highly pathogenic avian influenza detected from two Texas dairies. Information is flying everywhere, but here's what we do know. The Texas Animal Health Commission has detected HPAI in milk samples from two Texas dairies and two Kansas dairies. This follows a few weeks of dairies in the Panhandle reporting symptoms from an unknown infection or disease. Dairies also reported dead wild birds on their properties, which led to testing for HPAI. The Texas Animal Health Commission is emphasizing that although HPAI was present in those samples, additional testing is needed to confirm that it is the source of the cattle symptoms. Federal and state agencies are moving quickly to conduct additional testing for HPAI, as well as viral genome sequencing, so the emerging situation can be better understood. Unfortunately, cattle futures took a hit on Tuesday following the news, as managed funds sold the market, sending it sharply lower. Now, HPAI is nothing new to Texas, but veterinarian Dr. Bob Judd says the first case for 2024 was discovered in birds a few weeks ago.
The Texas Animal Health Commission, or TAHC, indicated that on March the 11th, the presence of highly pathogenic avian influenza virus, or HPAI, was detected in a flock of birds in Moore County, which is at the top of the Panhandle. The Animal Health Commission, along with the United States Department of Agriculture, indicated the virus affected a non-commercial mixed species backyard flock, and this is the first case of HPAI confirmed in Texas this year. Following the observation of sick and dying birds, samples were submitted to the Texas A&M Veterinary Medical Diagnostic Lab, and results were confirmed at the National Veterinary Services Lab in Ames, Iowa. The TAHC is working closely with federal animal health officials on a joint response. State officials quarantined the premise of infection and are conducting surveillance of areas surrounding the affected flock. According to the Centers for Disease Control, the public health risk associated with these avian detections remains low. However, it is always a good idea to cook all poultry and eggs to an internal temperature of 165 degrees Fahrenheit. Dr. Bud Dinges, executive director of the TAHC and state veterinarian, indicates that this first case of HPAI this year is a big reminder for all poultry producers, including backyard hobby farmers, large commercial industry, and exhibitors of poultry, to review your operations biosecurity measures and develop a plan for preventing this disease. Avian influenza is caused by an influenza type A virus and is carried by free-flying waterfowl, such as geese, ducks, and shore birds. The viruses are classified as low or high pathogenicity due to their ability to cause disease in domestic poultry. I'm Dr. Bob Judd. This is the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
The Texas and Southwestern Cattle Raisers Association has a new president. Carl Ray Polk is an East Texas cattleman who ranches in the Crockett and Lufkin area. He was elected to the position at the TSCRA convention in Fort Worth over the weekend
and says he's looking forward to the challenges that lie ahead for his two-year term.
Well, the list is a little long. I think what we're faced with in D.C. on the farm funding is critical for our industry. Here in Texas, we will have, I believe, 28 to 30 brand new members of the House of Representatives coming in 2025. We've adopted some pretty strong policies that we want to put before the legislature. That's going to be a challenge when you bring in 20% of the House of Representatives being new freshmen. We got a lot of work to do, and that is introducing those new members and those existing members to rural Texas.
It's not only the members of the legislature that Polk is focused on, it's the membership of the organization as well.
We're in an industry that's challenged, whether it's weather, whether it's cost of capital, it's a challenged industry, and therefore our membership is flat. So I feel like one of my focuses is going to be to engage as many of our members as we can and be able to offer our platforms to new members.
Over 4,000 cattle producers and industry professionals attended the TSCRA convention last weekend. Senators Mike Rounds of South Dakota and Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota have introduced a bill to require the Farm Service Agency to update livestock indemnity program payment rates quarterly based on the market value of the livestock. The agency is currently required to update the payment rates annually. Texas is losing some clout on a powerful House committee. Representative Kay Granger of Texas announced she's stepping down as chair of the House Appropriations Committee. Congressman Tom Cole of Oklahoma is considered the frontrunner to replace her. Prescribed burning may help prevent future Texas Panhandle wildfires. James Hunt has the story from Amarillo.
Hemphill County Extension Agent Andy Holloway says he hopes the recent wildfires will deliver a wake-up call to people in the Texas Panhandle. A wake-up call to recognize we cannot allow the region to become so overgrown.
It was just a matter of time till this happened because of the fuel load that every year just gets a little more and a little more and a little more because there's not enough cattle or wildlife or any other methods to utilize that forage. So it just stacks up. Stacks up on the ground as litter, and then new stuff grows and it dies, and the process goes on and on.
Holloway says to address the problem of excessive fuel load, ranchers and landowners must come to embrace prescribed burning. Even though many people are afraid that if their prescribed burn goes awry, they'll get hit with a lawsuit.
We've got to get over that because life, human life, is way more important than some fences or somebody else's grass.
And Holloway points out prescribed burning is already a routine practice in other parts of the country.
In the Flint Hills of Kansas, which has much of the same kind of grasses that we do here, they burn that country every year, fence row to fence row, because they know it improves the next year's grass. I've had people tell me, well, the Canadian River, the winds are just different along the river. Yada. Well, that some of that might be right, but there are times and ways and methods that we're smart people. We've got engineers and incredibly smart, gifted people that know how to plan out and do things.
Hemphill County Extension Agent Andy Holloway. I'm James Hunt on the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
U.S. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack clarified comments he made recently on use of the Commodity Credit Corporation funding. Jessica Domel has the details.
Lawmakers are questioning U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack's use of funding from the Commodity Credit Corporation. The CCC is a $30 billion fund used to implement specific programs established by Congress and carry out activities authorized in the CCC's charter. The CCC helps fund domestic farm income, price support, and conservation programs under the Farm Bill and programs that help develop foreign markets. Last week at a House Agriculture Appropriations Subcommittee hearing, Chairman Andy Harris of Maryland said he is concerned the CCC is being treated like a slush fund to advance political priorities not directed by Congress.
I've read your comments in news articles over the past few weeks suggesting that you can use CCC funds to help farm safety net programs outside of the regular Farm Bill process. I'm perplexed as to how USDA would be able to do this, as establishing reference prices and farm programs is done by Congress, the legislative branch, not the executive branch.
Harris said he hopes Congress can complete a new Farm Bill this year, but if not, it does not give the USDA the green light to start raiding the CCC fund to de facto set up new programs not authorized by Congress. Vilsack refuted Harris's claims.
I never suggested, nor did I ever say, that we would be using the CCC outside the scope of farm bill discussions and negotiations. What I did say was in order for us to have a farm bill, it's going to be necessary for members of the Ag Committee to be creative how they can use the resources within the CCC at their instruction and direction to be able to provide the relief and assistance they're looking for to bolster our safety net.
Later in the hearing, Congressman David Valadao of California asked Vilsack why he would not use the CCC funding to help farmers in his state impacted by flooding last year, citing former Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue's use of the CCC to provide disaster relief to those in Puerto Rico. Vilsack said he has to work within the guidelines of the CCC charter, which allows USDA to use the CCC to expand markets for agricultural commodities.
We use CCC to encourage purchases to food banks and for schools, which obviously will help the dairy industry because a portion of what's purchased is dairy product. We use the CCC to reduce fertilizer costs for farmers. We've used the CCC for a multitude of other commodity-related programs for farmers. The avian influenza is another example of resources that have gone into California and elsewhere that have been hit by avian influenza. So we use the CCC to help farmers. We just use it within the confines and structure of the charter.
That was Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack. For the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network, I'm Jessica Domel.
Promoting beef nutrition for infants and young children. I'm Tom Nicoletti, and I'll have a report with my interview with a registered dietitian at the University of Texas Dell Medical School straight ahead on Texas Ag Today.
These stories plus a look at the markets are straight ahead on Texas Ag Today.
Wildfires have devastated Texas ranches, burning millions of acres of rangeland, destroying buildings and fences, and killing thousands of cattle. You can help by donating to the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. Go to texasfarmbureau.org and click the red Wildfire Relief Fund button at the top of the page. 100% of every dollar you donate will go directly to a Texas rancher to help them rebuild. Go to texasfarmbureau.org to donate.
We're the number one rated farm and ranch radio network in Texas. This is Texas Ag Today on the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
Beef can be an important source of nutrition for infants and young children. Tom Nicoletti visits with a dietitian about work done to promote it.
My guest today from Austin is Kelly Hawthorne. She is a registered dietitian and the director for clinical research for the Department of Pediatrics at the Dell Medical School at the University of Texas in Austin. And Kelly, tell us how your department works with the promotion of beef nutrition for infants and young children.
We've been looking a lot at young children here at the University of Texas and the Dell Medical School, looking at food insecurity and different health factors that are related to nutrition. One important one, especially important for young children, is iron and zinc. There's various nutrients that are also important for growth in particular. Between the ages of 6 months of age and 2 years of age, the baby's brain is growing rapidly and it's developing more so than any other time of its lifespan. That's why having iron, which is an important component of this brain development, it's so critical to have iron in the diet because you need that iron in the diet to help with the brain development at this age range. Beef is such a great source of a nutrient-dense iron source, so that's why it's so important to include iron at this time. The newest information that we're really looking at is targeting birth to 2 years of age, and that is really an outcome of something new that's happened with the latest version of the 2020 Dietary Guidelines for Americans. That comes out every 5 years. That's mandated by law. The dietary guidelines are the basis for all federally funded nutrition programs. And 2020 was the very first time ever that they included that birth to 2 years of age group and what the nutrition recommendations for that age group should be. So that's really been a large focus for a lot of the nutrition community. We're looking at nutrition for children and families of all age groups and different socioeconomic groups. But we do know that single moms with children are among the highest risk of those with food insecurity. There's something called food deserts, which is a location where people don't live very close to a grocery store where they can have easy access to produce and meat and dairy products. And maybe they're obtaining that from just a convenience store or something like that. So they don't really have a grocery store nearby. So that's called a food desert. And it doesn't really have to be out in the country either. One of my UT students moved to the east side of Austin and found that the closest grocery store to her was still a 15-minute drive away. So that can really impact health dramatically. But we also have what's called food swamps, which is an excessive amount of fast food and other less nutritionally dense foods packed in together. So they can access food, but sometimes it's lower quality, but very abundant. And people in these communities have higher rates of obesity than those living in food deserts because they're not eating according to what the dietary guidelines and the research has shown to be a healthy diet. And that's one that includes nutrient-dense foods such as beef. So we're looking at fruits and vegetables, and there's so many other nutrients that are available in that, and fiber and vitamins and minerals, and then also whole grains. And so we really do target and teach people how to include a balanced, healthy diet of a lot of nutrient-dense foods.
That is registered dietitian Kelly Hawthorne with the Dell Medical School at the University of Texas, where she focuses on neonatal and pediatric nutrition. I'm Tom Nicoletti at the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
We'll check the markets coming up next on Texas Ag Today.
Catastrophic wildfires have scorched over 1 million acres in the Texas Panhandle. Homes, barns, fences, and livestock have been lost. You can help farmers and ranchers who have been affected by these fires by donating to the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. 100% of all donations received go directly to farmers and ranchers impacted by these fires. To make a tax-deductible donation, go to texasfarmbureau.org and click the red Wildfire Relief Fund button at the top of the page.
Here's the latest market information on Texas Ag Today.
Let's take a look back at how our markets wrapped up on Tuesday. We saw cattle futures take a big tumble after news broke that highly pathogenic avian influenza was found in milk samples from Texas and Kansas dairies. The managed funds in the cattle futures market had a knee-jerk reaction and sold the market. That sent prices sharply lower. April live cattle down 310, 183.10. The June down 322, 178.37. With August live cattle down 355, 176.42. Same thing on feeder cattle. March contract dropped $1.72, 247.72. April feeders down $5, 245.45. With May feeder cattle dropping 537, 247.25. Cash fed cattle market, all quiet so far. No bids or asking prices to report. Boxed beef was mixed with choice up 37 cents, 311.26. Select down $1.52 at $300.44. Now let's check the auction barns. We're walking the pens with Larry Marble.
Riley Rhodes Live Oak Livestock Three Rivers sells them down in Live Oak County every Monday. Riley, how was this last Monday sale?
The market just kind of continues to make a little strides each week, it seems like, but ended up with a few more than we did last week, 1,397 total head. They put a little bit more money on cows this week, so they sold a little higher, and then calf market just fully steady all the way across, maybe a little higher in spots. Few pairs, splitting some of those out and got a few of them sold, but anywhere from 1,200 up to 2,350. Some bred cows from 1,150 to 2,100. High yield and packer cows, 136 to 146. Your breakers and heavy boners, 118 to 132. And boner, the thinner cows, 96 to $1.18. High yield and packer bulls, 138 to 148. excuse me, low to medium yielding bulls, 118 to 138. Your 2 to 3 weight choice steers, 356 to 398. Heifer mates, 342 to 380. 3 to 4 weight choice steers, 346 to 394. Heifer mates, 318 to 360. 4 to 5 weight choice steers, 316 to 382. Heifer mates, 264 to 338. 5 to 6 weight choice steers, 280 to 328. Heifer mates, 248 to 276. 6 to 7 weight choice steers, 248 to 296. And their heifer mates, 234 to 268. 7 to 8 weight choice steers, 232 to 264. And their heifer mates, 220 to 254. So got along real well, had pretty good volume. Quality was good again today, and real pleased with the market.
Good. Tell everybody how to get a hold of you, Riley.
My cell phone's 361-813-6650. They're the office, 361-786-2553. Always go to our webpage, liveoaklivestock.com, and we'll have some pictures posted up there pretty quick on that special sale coming up on April 13th on our webpage.
Riley, thanks for participating and walking the pens here on the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network. Network neighbors, I'm Larry Marble. Thank you for listening. Good day.
Thanks, Larry. Back over to the futures market now, where lean hogs finish mixed. April hogs up 42 cents, 85.57. May down 17 at 91.75. Class 3 milk mixed as well. Nearby March milk down a penny, 16.41 a hundredweight, with April milk up to 15.77 a hundred. Cotton futures sharply higher on the old crop contracts as traders position ahead of Thursday's planting intentions report. That'll give us the latest estimate on cotton acreage plantings here in the U.S. May cotton up 139 points, closing at 93.41. July cotton up 131, 93.86. With new crop December up 29, 84.30 cents. Corn and wheat both headed lower, with May corn dropping 5 1/4, 432.5. July corn down 6 1/4, 445 a bushel. September corn down 6 3/4, 454 1/4. Double-digit losses in both hard and soft wheat. May Kansas City wheat dropped 12 1/4, 577 1/4, while the new crop July contract was down 11 1/2, 574 a bushel. July Chicago wheat down 11 1/2, 559 1/4. In the energy markets, May natural gas was unchanged at $1.78. May West Texas crude oil down 46, 81.49 a barrel. The financial markets slightly lower. The Dow was down 32 points, 39,281. The NASDAQ down 65 at 16,322. The S&P down 13 at 5,205. That wraps up our look at the markets, and that wraps up this episode of Texas Ag Today. I'm Kerry Martin. Hope to see you back here next time as we cover the most important industry in this greatest state in the U.S. of A, Texas agriculture.
Thanks for joining us for Texas Ag Today. Be sure to follow the Texas Ag Today podcast, found wherever you listen to podcasts. For more Texas farm and ranch news, check out our website at texasfarmbureau.org or tfbradio.com. Texas Ag Today is a production of the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.